Hi, I'm Elizabeth. I'm an alcoholic. And I am grateful to be here. This is just God doing for me what I can't do for myself. Public speaking is one of my least favorite things, and yesterday I was in an all-day work seminar about public speaking, and I show up to the meeting to make coffee tonight, and my sponsor asked me to speak. So, it's not nervous being around you guys. I don't know. This is my story. There's nothing I have to hide from you guys. You know, I owe my life to you all. And it's just amazing that I get this opportunity. You know, there's so many people that I know that don't get this opportunity, that they're no longer alive. They're, you know, doing their own thing. They're managing it themselves, whatever. I'm just so grateful today that I know I'm not in charge and that if I don't have you guys in my life, it gets a lot crazier. So just to start it off, to help you do the math, I'm always wondering how old people are, when they got sober, everything. So my sobriety date, September 24th, 1996. I was 15 when I got sober, and now I'm 33. I'll have 18 years this September. So So it's funny because I've been a part of young people's meetings for a time and then left and then come back, and it just feels very refreshing. And I don't know how else to explain it, but it just feels like home. You know, I grew up in Atlanta in the South, very religious family, very middle class, pretty typical. I was the oldest. My brother was a golden child, and so I spent my life trying to terrorize him. didn't really work out, you know. But for me, alcoholism runs in my family. You know, I was taught at a very young age not to do drugs, not to drink, you know, child of the DARE, Nancy Reagan era. And it was, you know, so deep into me, like, that's not what you should do. I remember, like, crying at the beach when my dad had, like, a beer. You know, it was just like, you're going to be an alcoholic, you know. Like, I just thought, like, if you drink, you're an alcoholic. Like, that was what I assumed. And this is something I just realized the other day. My husband is not one of us, and God bless him for that, but I told him the story. He thought it was funny, so I'm sharing it with you guys. Because the Piano Man, the Billy Joel song, it's 9 o'clock on a Saturday. Even from a little kid, I thought it was 9 a.m. I thought that people were going to the bar at 9 a.m. to drink. Like, that's not what normal little kids think, you know? But, so I was, you know, instantly I stood out, and I didn't want alcohol to be my solution, but ultimately it did become my solution. It was something that, you know, again, I grew up very religious and very, you know, strict and, like, restrictions. You can't do this. You can't. And so I wanted to rebel. You know, I wanted to be what they didn't want. You know, I wanted, if only they would leave me alone. If only I could be myself. If only there weren't so many rules, like, then I'd be okay. You know, and there weren't as many rules for my brother, so that was unfair. And if it was unfair, you know, that was just my goal in life was to make sure everything was fair. But really, it was selfish. I wanted things my way, you know. And so I had a best friend since we were two. We had chicken pox together. And she was my running buddy, you know. She was the bad one. I was the good one. So we could get away with a lot, you know. I learned manipulation at a very early age of, you know, how to get away with lying, how to get what I wanted from people, what to say when. And I used that for a long time. And still, in sobriety, it's hard to get rid of it. You know, these are chunks of my being, you know. It doesn't just go away. But anyway, she and I had a great idea. We were going to run away to California. So, like I said, we were in the South, in Georgia, Atlanta, and we were 15. We were going to steal her parents' car and drive all the way to California. And my goal in life was to become a pharmacist so that I could have access to as much drugs as possible. So these are just ideas that came up, like, gradually. You know, it was like my first drink I ever had, I think, was with the church kids, you know, just being rebels at the camp, you know, and it, you know, built on from there. The first time I was in health class when I learned that LSD was acid. Like, I just thought I did acid. I didn't realize I did LSD, you know? It was very naive and very just like, I'll do anything to not have to be inside of my skin. It just didn't, you know, nothing felt right. It just wasn't okay. From a young age, like, I was obsessed with death. You know, I wanted to know what happened. My best friend died when I was 5. Another, not the one I had chickenpox with, but my friend from school. And so it was just my imagination's way of dealing with things. I just didn't understand. Still don't, but, you know, it's just gotten easier. A 5-year-old's not supposed to understand that. But, you know, going back to when I was 15 and we were going to run away, this was the first time I think my higher power stepped in, because I was in 9th grade and I said, something inside me said, don't go on this trip. Like, you have 2 more weeks left of school. And there was something, it sounds so ridiculous, but who's going to hire a 9th grade, someone who doesn't even have a 9th grade education? Like, you need to at least get that. Then you can at least work at a pharmacy. That was my dream. It became, you know, it was to be a pharmacist, and then it became just to work at a pharmacy. So I was like, I can't go. And so she ends up stealing the car by herself, and she made it 20 miles outside of Atlanta before she got caught. We were into punk rock. I forgot to mention that. My head was shaved. It was just, you know, I'm not the person you see today. My hair was, you know, I'll get there. But I had it shaved in the front. She had a mohawk, a full mohawk. And so she got busted 20 miles outside of Atlanta. Her parents, since she was the bad one, she got sent to long-term treatment. And I was the one who was, like, left stuck. Like, she was my out for so many things. I could blame her. Or look at me. I'm the good one. She's not. Like, put all the attention on her. So all the attention left and got on me. And that's when I believe I crossed the line over into alcoholism, because it stopped being fun and it stopped being, like, a camaraderie. It was just doing anything and everything I could to get as blitzed as I could. I did not want to be myself. And I could not stand myself. So that was about, that was in May, right? So school in the South goes longer. And 2 weeks left till we graduated or whatever. So I went, or not, whatever, went 9th grade. So my parents go to the beach every year at this time, and with the whole family. And I was like, fine, I'll go to the beach. But I needed to have some dry goods and lots of other things with me. And I brought another friend, and we ended up riding bicycles around for 2 days, you know, during one of the biggest hurricanes in South Carolina's history. And my family was so worried, where are you? And all I could think to say was, under shelter. I was under shelter. You know, that was where you're supposed to be during a hurricane, and that's where I wanted them to think I was. But really, I'd, you know, met some friends at the whatever pavilion, you know, and just like gone and not cared about anyone or anything. It was just about not being me. And so my parents were like, the jig's up. Like, we're taking you to treatment. We know something's up. So that was my first experience with treatment. And, you know, I've been in therapy since I was 5, since a friend of mine had died. So I knew that was where I learned how to manipulate people. And so I was like, great, I'm going to treatment. I can get really good drugs now. Like, I wasn't upset at all. Like, I was thinking of how I could manipulate the doctors and get, like, some good stuff. And it's just so sick, I think, back to it. But that was my only outlet. You know, this was it. Like, I didn't have anything greater than myself. I was the end-all, be-all. And I needed to figure out everything, you know. And anyways, I got to this treatment, and I didn't think I was an alcoholic because the people I was in there with were snorting pixie sticks, which I was too, but I didn't have to. They had to. And so that made me not an alcoholic. Whatever reasons, you know, that's why I think it's so... I think it's really important that we focus on our experience and, you know, look for the similarities, not the differences, because there's so many ways that we can find to be different with each other, you know, at least I can, and why I don't need to be here, and why we relate it to alcoholism specifically. But, I mean, drugs are a part of my story. I got sober before I was allowed to buy alcohol, so, of course, like, it was anything I could grab. But so for me, during this period is when it talks about in the doctor's opinion, when you lose the, when you can't differentiate the true from the false. And that was where I was, because I was passing my drug tests, but I wasn't sober. I was, you know, sitting outside meeting or meeting people outside meetings, going and getting drunk afterwards. You know, I was 15. I was kind of like a novelty at the meetings. Like there were some younger kids, like maybe in their older, like 19, 20, that they'd be like, let me show you my chips. You know, it was like not serious at all. And like going and getting drunk afterward. And that was where another line I crossed into my alcoholism, because again, I was fooling everyone, I had thought, but really I was fooling myself. And so there came another point. It was my parents' 20th wedding anniversary. And what a better way to get back at them than to kill myself on their wedding anniversary. Because this was all their fault. If only they had let me do what I wanted, if they would let me, you know, I wanted to move out when I was like 13. You know, I was ready. I was done with them. If they had just let me alone, then they would be fine. And this is where I had my first higher power moment, because this voice came inside my head and said, if this is what life is like at 15, how do people live to be 30? And it was so powerful. It was just like calming. And I'd never really believed in anything bigger than myself or anything like that. And then the voice came and said, you can kill yourself next year. And that sounds so morbid and so disgusting, but it was the most positive thought that had come into my head in a long time. And I had thought, oh, if I get a boyfriend, if I get a job, if I get a car, like these things will make me better. And I didn't think about sobriety. I wish I could tell you I was struck sober at that moment, but I wasn't. So their anniversary is in June. I went back to school and I was going to these meetings at the treatment center, and you know, I didn't even know what a sponsor was. I didn't know what the steps were. The people I was hanging out with were like teaching me how to skip the system. You know, I didn't ever ask anyone what these things were, because I didn't care, because I knew I didn't belong here. But I thought, you know, I'm just going to kill myself next year. So like, let's just see what this year's got. This is my last year to live. And, you know, I was smoking outside school, and this kid came up to me, and he's like, well, so my school, they had, like, jocks, and then they had, like, straight-edge kids, which didn't smoke, didn't eat meat, didn't have sex, and then there was, like, the punk kids, and I thought this guy was straight-edge, and so I was like, are you straight-edge? He's like, no, I'm just sober, and I was like, oh, me too, like, holy shit, like, this is amazing. And this is where, again, the true from the false. Like, I was passing my drug test, so everyone thought I was sober, but I was not. And he asked where I went to meetings, and I told him. And he, at the treatment center, like, thinking that would push him away, like, oh, she's crazy, not going to talk to her. But he was like, oh, you should come to some of my meetings. Like, I'd love to check out your meeting, but, you know, I go to this young people's meeting. And that was where everything changed. Because when I got involved, I saw people my own age, and it was this thing they called enthusiastic sobriety. So it was not much step work and not much, you know, but it was all about the fellowship, and that was exactly what I needed, because I didn't know how to be comfortable in my own skin, and to see people who said that they had felt like me at one point, and to see that they were laughing and living their lives and like their dreams were coming true, like that rocked my world. Like I just could not understand that. And I was taking like tons of different prescriptions and things, and so my sobriety date is actually really blurry for me. I just had to pick a date. And I always get nervous when people say, if you don't remember your last drink, you haven't had it. I don't think that that's true, because I don't remember my last drink, but I did choose a date. Because that was, like I said, I wanted to kill myself. My parents' anniversary was June. I started coming to these meetings in September. September 24th just makes sense. But life has been up and down since then, as most of you probably know. And sobriety is such a gift, you know. If you're lucky enough to be here, like, I wish I could just emphasize this point enough. Like, this is where the good stuff is, you know. We have it, you know. There's so much life to be lived, and we get to do it sober. You know, I was able to graduate high school. I was able to go to college. I did a study abroad, you know, all before I was 21. And I was like, how am I going to go overseas and not drink? And I had my AA coin in my pocket the whole time. You know, I was just like spinning it. And it just didn't matter. Like, people thought I was religious. People thought, and I was like, I don't care, you know. I know what happens to me when I drink. And there's so many of my friends that have gone out, and so many of them have died. Some of them seem normal. Some of them seem okay. My best friend, after 14 years, went out 2 years ago, and now she's back and has 2 years. And that was a really hard time for me because I was like, well, she looks like she can do it, you know. And with people getting married and having kids and everything, you know, it just gets really busy. And that's why I think it's so important to keep this program in the center of your life. As much as I kind of rolled my eyes when I just said that, because if I don't have this, I don't have the things in my life that, you know, make my life. It's just amazing. So I'll just share a couple of stories. It's almost time, I think. But I've gotten to... Okay, so I've got... you know, I moved to New York sober. Like, there's just amazing things that I've gotten to do. And, you know, it's like, I don't know what the future holds for me, and that's okay. You know, I always had the plans. If you had done this for me, then I would do the, you know. But today, I just do the best I can and show up for people. And, you know, it's been, you know, a crazy couple of years. My mother and I really have never gotten along great. We fought a lot when I was younger, and it's gotten so much better over these past 17 years. You know, I was able, we've, you know, done a couple different family vacations, and it's, I'm so glad that they're still in my life, you know, that they still want me around. She's kind of rewritten history and doesn't remember a lot of things, and that's okay. But, you know, I get to show up, and, you know, my brother had a baby a couple of years ago, and I get to show up for my nephew now. And my grandma passed away, and I was at her bedside when she passed away, you know, one of the most important people in my life. That was just last June, so still really feeling that. But, you know, it's just amazing what this program can do, and like, just the energy and the enthusiasm I feel in this room is just so incredible that I hope that, like, all of you guys feel this too, because it'll keep me sober for today, and that's all I need to keep going. So thank you.